Good afternoon, listeners. I want to welcome you to the show, Shooting from the Hip. Your host today, Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery from Sim Trainer. Sim Trainer is the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range, firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, directly across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can call us at 937-293-3914. Today's show, we're going to devote to concealed carry and concealed carry-related issues to begin with. However, before starting, there's a couple of special things we want to get out of the way that we feel are important. I would like to devote today's show to two very special people. First of all, my son, Mark. Mark just graduated from high school and is going to go on to the University of Akron this coming fall. And I want to congratulate him for a great accomplishment, wish him well in his future. I also like to welcome all of our friends and family that are in town from out of the area to celebrate this momentous occasion.
Hi, this is Mark Avery, and I'm one of the instructors at Sim Trainer, and I've got a special person that I want to recognize, too. That's my daughter, Christine. She graduated last night with her associate's degree from Sinclair Community College. Sinclair is the number two community college in the country, and she was the number two graduate in that class. So we're very proud of her. She graduated with high honors, Phi Beta Kappa, and she is getting ready to go to Wittenberg University, and she'll graduate in 3 years there with her master's degree in education, and she wants to teach. She'll probably come back and teach at Sinclair for part of the time anyway, and she also wants to teach junior high. So we're very proud of her, and a special shout-out to all of the family that I know happens to be listening online. So you can send Christine a message and tell her how much you're proud of her as much as I am, because both Jeff and I barely able to get into the studio because our heads are so big and swelling with pride for our kids.
That's right. And to all our listeners out there who have special people that have graduated from high school or college in the last month or so, congratulations to you. And I know this is a big time of the year, and I hope the festivities are fun. I want to talk a little bit about concealed carry today, because we've been getting several questions over the last several weeks, both on the air and via the email, concerning some of the particularities. And I want to start off by mentioning that at Sim Trainer, we take the concealed carry training very, very seriously. And we do that because it's a very serious responsibility. An individual that chooses to arm him or herself with a firearm to protect him or herself from predators takes on a very serious responsibility. And we want to make sure that they get the training that they need. And to accomplish that, I want to first of all mention that our class, the focus of our class, is designed to focus on that serious responsibility. It's not about shooting guns. Matter of fact, our class, we want people to have the accomplished training in the firearms usage before they come to class. And if they don't have that, we offer them two options. We let them take private lessons with our senior staff instructors, or we encourage them to go through basic training so they come up to speed with the use of the firearm before they actually take the class. Because when they go to the class, they're going to be exposed to some things that are going to prepare them for the real world. And by completion of our course, after 15 hours of training, we realize that once they get their permit within the next 30 days, that they're going to have to be prepared for potentially a serious encounter whereby they may have to use that firearm to defend themselves or others. And that's a serious responsibility, and we want to let you know that when you come to Sim Trainer to take your training, we treat that with a very high regard, and we want you to leave there with the competency and competence that you're going to need to get involved in a situation. Also want to mention that in our course, two unique features. We have an attorney that actually teaches the legal block. He'll address both the civil and the criminal aspects of concealed carry and related issues. And although you may not like some of the answers you hear, you certainly will have the opportunity to ask the question and leave there informed. Secondly, we offer a very structured course of fire that will help you develop that competency you're going to need for potentially using your firearm.
We've got a call on the line already, Jeff. Let's talk to Ron in Fairborn, who has a question about concealed carry. Ron, are you on the air with us?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
My question is essentially, if I have a permit for concealed carry from the state of Florida, is it imperative that I, now being a resident in Ohio, that I get one for this state also, or what?
Well, first of all, Ron, when you say imperative, that's a term that I don't really want to use. What I want to encourage you to think about is this. If you are a resident of the state of Ohio, the advice I'm going to give you is to obtain the concealed holder license in the state of Ohio in addition to the permit that you've acquired from the state of Florida. And I say that because if in fact or if and when a case would ever go to trial, one of the biggest things that defense attorneys are going to attack you on is the fact that you're a resident of Ohio. You don't even have the permit in the state of Ohio, even though Florida has reciprocity with Ohio. It just makes good sense.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question about the Florida license. Do you know, I realize that Florida has a non-resident license available, but I don't know if when you move out of state, if you have to do something with your license in order to keep it in Florida. Do you know?
No, I don't. I know they, you can have it both, you know, in the state or out of the state or whatever.
That's correct. But when you got your license, it was an in-state license, and now you're no longer a resident of Florida. So there is that possibility, and I don't know, but you need to check. And as a license holder in Florida, it's your responsibility to know before you try to carry on that license somewhere else whether or not that license is still valid, because it was issued as an in-state license and you're now a non-resident. So you would need to verify that one way or the other first before you do anything else. But as Jeff mentioned, getting an Ohio license gives you a distinct advantage if you ever end up needing to use your handgun for personal defense and then you have to defend yourself. Having an Ohio license will make that a much easier defense.
Okay. Ron, if you would, one other thing I'd like you to share with our listeners is what exactly were the training requirements requisite to you obtaining that license in Florida?
Well, Florida, now actually I'm originally from Texas area, but you can apply for Florida license essentially for a lot of different states, and all that's needed, if you've been trained in the military, you just send a copy of your DD Form 214.
Okay, but if you weren't trained in the military, like a lot of people out there, they've not been fortunate enough to have that experience. What were in your particular case? Did you have the military background? Is that what got you?
Yes, sir. And that automatically allow you to meet the criteria of their gun owner concealed weapon for that state. If you've been trained in the military, like in my case, I was 4 years in the Army. I carried a pistol. I qualified with a pistol as well as the M16 and all that. So they know that you've been through training and safety and all that.
Right.
Now, obviously, if you don't have the military background, then you have to go through the same type of training you do here in Ohio.
Right, and that's a good point. And I thank you for sharing that with us, Ron. It brings me right to my next issue that I want to present to the listening audience out there is the issue of training is so critical. Regardless of the circumstances under which you acquire your license in any location around the country, people need to seek training, and you need to seek ongoing training on a regular basis in order to stay up to speed with the skills you're going to need to ultimately be successful in an armed encounter. But that's an issue that we're going to continue to talk about throughout the show and in future shows, because training is very important, and I'm glad you shared that with us. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks for calling, Ron. Let's talk a little bit about some of the preparation that you have to do that we require for folks that come to take the concealed carry class. As you mentioned, our class is more about the role, the right responsibilities, the moral, ethical, and legal responsibilities of carrying a firearm for concealed as for personal defense. But we don't cover as much. I mean, we obviously cover everything that the law requires that we cover. We do go through the basic fundamentals of handling a firearm and firearm safety, and we do a qualification course of fire that includes 60 rounds, both from the holster and from the handheld position, so that we know that people have at least the basic skills necessary to defend themselves should they ever have to use their firearm. But let's talk a little bit about the basic class and the kinds of things that we cover in preparing someone to have the skills necessary for concealed carry. Jeff?
Yeah, our basic handgun class, for example, it's going to start off with an overview of firearm safety rules and laws and firearm and range safety rules. And then we're going to progress into basic functional operation of whatever firearms that the people wish to start shooting. And we'll talk about the different parts of a gun, how the gun works. We kind of explain that, because some people take for granted that they understand that, and then that's somewhat important and often overlooked. We then progress to some of the basic fundamentals of weapons handling, everything from loading the magazine with the ammunition to loading the gun or loading the magazine into the gun. If you had a revolver, how to actually get the cylinder out of the frame. We talk about charging the weapon. We talk about aiming the weapon, acquiring a good grip in the holster, first of all, and or getting a good grip when you're in the extended pistol shooting position when you're shooting at your target. We talk about sight picture, sight alignment, a whole wide array of topics that are going to be so critical when a person decides to enter into this this whole concept of concealed carry. And we do it in such a way that we're going to get you to the level of competency very quickly, and that's one of the major advantages to our basic training class.
Okay, we're coming up on about 18 minutes after the hour, so let's take a break now, and when we come back, we'll talk more about concealed carry. If you'd like to call us at 457-1290, and we'll get you up on the air, answer your questions about concealed carry. This is AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to Shooting from the Hip. You're listening to Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro from Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training facility. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road. You can reach us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can call us at 937-293-3914. Today we're focusing on concealed carry and concealed carry issues, and we want to talk a little bit about what it takes to acquire your concealed carry permit so that our listeners out there are very clear as to what the process involves. First of all, when you're interested in doing this, you have to understand you must undergo at least 12 hours training. We've expanded our course to 15 hours because there's a lot of information that we feel is important to be included in that basic training to make you more well-rounded and better prepared for what you're about to enter into. But you must take a training class that's at least 12 hours, and it must be taught by NRA or other certified instructors. And you need to make sure, and you have the right to ask that question when you go looking for training, to make sure that the people meet the minimum requirements that the state has mandated. Once you've obtained the training, you'll receive, or you should receive, a training certificate of completion of that training, and then you're required to take that certificate along with an application that you can download from your local sheriff's department or from the Ohio Attorney General's website. You'll take the application for the concealed holder's license to your local sheriff's department, and you will submit that application along with a set of fingerprints, and they'll take a photograph of you, and then you'll have to undergo a background check. And that background check is going to be designed to determine if you have any disqualifying offenses in your background, any criminal convictions or any indictments that would exclude you from obtaining a permit. Things like any felony, obviously, is going to exclude you from being able to obtain that concealed holder's license. Drug-related offenses, trafficking in drugs, if you have a domestic violence conviction, or if you have an order protection against you in conjunction with some sort of a domestic-related issue or other circumstance. There are other types of crimes such as assaults or negligent assaults within 5 years of your application. All those things, among others, are going to exclude you from being able to obtain your concealed holder's license. And there are several people throughout the state who have gone to apply for their license, and they thought, you know, things happened 10, 12, 15, 20 years ago. They've come up to a level of conscious awareness, and then they were ultimately forbidden from obtaining their license.
One of the classic examples is folks that maybe years and years ago may have had something that was a misdemeanor drug conviction, possession of marijuana, and any drug of abuse, which marijuana is included, any conviction on that excludes you from being able to get a license to carry concealed.
And, you know, that's one thing I want to mention. As a law enforcement officer, this is something that comes up quite frequently. We catch teenagers and young adults who are dabbling in drugs, and many of those people want to go into the law enforcement profession. They want to be nurses. They want to be doctors. They want to be school teachers. Maybe they want to get a concealed holder's license. Well, that arrest and or charge for smoking marijuana while they're out with their buddies could ultimately exclude them from a lot of things. So I want to encourage our listeners out there to be very vigilant about those types of activities, trying to avoid those, and set yourself up for a situation where you'll be able to enjoy whatever you want in your future. We're going to go ahead and go to a caller. Mark, we have a couple callers online.
Yeah, we've got David is on the line from Huber Heights, and he has a comment about the Florida carry license. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Kudos to you guys. Something like this has been needed for a long time.
Thanks very much.
Point of information, I also have I'm an NRA certified instructor as well, and I also have my Florida permit. That's known as a standalone permit because of the ID requirements and the picture, the photo ID. There are what they call piggyback, which is Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and a bunch of others. The comment is, the gentleman who called in earlier, I was listening, had some questions about the relevancy of his Florida permit. If he would go back to the information packet that was sent to him in the brown envelope from the, it says Florida Department of State Divisions of Licensing, go to the very back page, and that will give him the information that he requires. There's about 14 caveats in there that tell you what you can and can't do. I was searching for mine while you were on break, and I can't find it right now. I'm sorry.
Okay. And we also have copies of that package at SimTrainer, so if he wants to come by there, we'll be happy to help him out as well.
Yeah, he needs to get into that because there are provisions in there that he needs to read and understand. Like you say, the Ohio permits and the training that is required by the state of Ohio is really, in my estimation, a very good thing for the very simple reason, if you travel out of state, a lot of people, a lot of states recognize your license.
Right. Well, in addition to that, just the fact having the training is going to make you better prepared for the circumstances. And we'll go ahead and pass that information on to our listeners, and we'll make it available. We appreciate you letting us know about that Florida provision.
David, thanks so much for giving us a call. We're about at the bottom of the hour, so we'll take a break here real soon. And when we come back, Dave is on the line, and you can get on the line at 457-1290. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Okay, I'd like to welcome our listeners back to the show. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip with your hosts, Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro from SimTrainer. For those of you that are listening and any listeners who have just joined us, I want to encourage you, if you have any questions or want to find out a little bit about SimTrainer, about some of the course offerings we have, particularly the concealed carry course, please take time to visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. Stop by our facility at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine across from DP&L or call us at 937-293-3914 and we'll be glad to assist you. Concerning our concealed carry class, there's a couple other things I want to bring up that are very important that we cover there that we think are so critical to obtaining your license and ultimately making you feel more comfortable and capable when you decide to carry a firearm, and that's concealed carry options. How do you carry the gun? As we go into the summer months, people got to realize as you're shedding clothing, it's not easy to conceal a gun. So you pretty much have to change your wardrobe. You have to make sure that you have a holster or a concealment option that is suitable for the weapon that you have, and that's something that we take very seriously at SimTrainer. A logical follow-up to that is safety in the home. What do you do with the gun when you don't have it? Where do you keep it? How do you keep it secured so that people who shouldn't get access to it? We take that responsibility very seriously, and we're going to show you some options that are very practical so that you're well-prepared when you complete that class so that as soon as you get your permit, you're going to be into what you need. And finally, one other thing I want to mention, we go over scenarios. We look at what happens around the country. We have videotapes of some incidents that have been captured on tape, and we talk about the dynamics of that kind of an encounter to give you some level of mental preparation for what you're about to embark upon, because it's not just a case of you walk into a situation, you pull your gun, and you give commands and or you use your firearm to defend yourself or another. There's a lot of issues that go into that, and we take that serious, and we want you to experience that a little bit in the training itself. I'm going to let Mark now talk a little bit about some of the prohibited areas. Once you've obtained your permit, you get your permit, you've decided to carry, you start to carry, where can you go, where can't you go once you get the permit?
And by the time we finish this list, you may think that why bother getting a license to carry concealed because I can't carry it anywhere anyway. Some of the places make some sense, like police stations, sheriff's offices, highway patrol posts, and anything that is any of the prison facilities, correctional institutions, mental institutions. Those kinds of places make kind of sense in some ways. But we've seen lately several churches where there have been attacks, And churches are by default a place that you can't carry unless you get permission from the church. Universities, unless it's locked in a motor vehicle. Any place where liquor is served in an open container. And, of course, last week we talked with Representative Jared Martin about the bill he introduced, HB 203, that would allow you to carry in a restaurant. And you, as long as you're not consuming any alcohol, you'd be able to carry. You would not have to be disarmed, but then you'd also be equipped should that should the situation become necessary or when you're leaving the restaurant and going back to your vehicle. Any government facility. Now, just recently with the bill that passed in September, the government facilities were changed so that any building that's not an occupied, it's not an office building, that is not included. There was at one time every place that was owned by the government, including picnic shelters and restrooms in the parks, were all considered government facilities. Places like the rest stop on the highway were considered government facilities. You weren't able to carry there. Fortunately, that was clarified to be what the original intent of the law was, and that is occupied buildings and buildings where they're office buildings and so forth. But those office buildings, you know, people go into government buildings with evil intent, and you shouldn't really be disarmed. Unfortunately, the law, the way the law is currently written, you are. You must be disarmed when you go into those places, and another place is a school safety zone. So the school safety zone includes a building, school premises, which is the, includes the parking lot, any school activity. So if you if your school is playing a soccer game at a city park and you're going there to watch the soccer game, then you can't carry in that city park because it's a school activity. And the only exception to that is if you are driving on to the school property to pick up or drop off a child, then if you stay in your vehicle, you can have your firearm in the vehicle. But if you have to leave the vehicle for any reason, like, for instance, maybe your child isn't quite ready to leave and wasn't waiting where they were supposed to be, I know those of you with kids in school probably never have that happen because they're always ready exactly when you're supposed to, maybe not. So you have to be sure that you have some other way to get a hold of them, call their cell phone or something. You can't leave the vehicle as long as you have the firearm, and you can't leave it in the vehicle because then you would be leaving it in a vehicle on a school premises, and that's prohibited.
Okay, a couple other things I just want to mention. When you're transporting the firearm in your motor vehicle, you have to carry it in certain ways. One of the ways is obviously if you have it loaded in a holster secured on your person. That's the most logical way in which most people, most common way in which most people would carry it. And remember that the plain sight provision was removed from the law a couple years ago, so that no longer applies. So you are allowed to carry that gun on your person in a concealed manner. While you're in the car, right. Also, a loaded handgun can be in a closed case, box, bag, or other container that's in plain sight, and it has a lid, cover, or closing mechanism with a zipper, a snap, a buckle, which lid or cover or closing mechanism can be opened for the person to gain access to the handgun. And then finally, the loaded handgun can be securely encased by being stored in a closed glove compartment or console, which are probably the most common places that people would carry it when they don't have it on their person or on a case that is locked elsewhere in the vehicle.
That's a change that occurred in September that when that law went into effect, that also included the carry, the Castle Doctrine. You no longer have to have it in a locked glove compartment, and they added the console. So it can be accessible quickly, but you do have to have the console closed. We have a call on the line from Dave in Centerville, and he has a question. Dave, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Give us what's your question?
Well, first of all, I don't know much about Florida, but I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I used to have concealed carry in PA. I can't tell you that there were no requirements whatsoever. Filled out an application, paid a small fee, they did a background check, and you got the license within about 30 days.
That's correct.
Yeah. My question is, I still commute back and forth to PA a lot. I have Ohio concealed carry. Is that permit good in Pennsylvania?
No, it's not. We do not have reciprocity with Pennsylvania, and they don't recognize our license. However, you can get a Pennsylvania license by taking a copy of your Ohio license, filling out the Pennsylvania application, and sending that with a license fee of $26, and they will send you back a paper license that goes along with your Ohio license. So you have to have the two of them together, but then your Pennsylvania, you would be able to then carry in Pennsylvania, and that adds a few other states as well, because the Georgia and Texas and a couple others, but those were the two I needed, which is why I got the Pennsylvania license.
Yeah, one other comment I want to make about that is one of the main reasons we don't have reciprocity with Pennsylvania is because Ohio has set such high training standards. Pennsylvania, being a birthright state, obviously, as you mentioned, doesn't have the training requirements, so the Ohio legislature decided they weren't going to enter into a reciprocity agreement with Pennsylvania. But I think the way Mark just explained it is the most logical way for you to go about obtaining what you need.
Now, one of the things that we talked about, we have talked about in the past, is some bills. And on our, if you go to our website at Shooting From the Hip website at sim-trainer.com/radio, there's a link to a bill called the H.R. 197, the National Right to Carry Reciprocity Act of 2009. And that bill currently has 127 sponsors. And if that bill gets passed, then your license from whatever state that you live in would be honored just like your driver's license is currently honored in all 50 states, even if they don't have a right to carry provision in their own law. Even if they don't trust their own citizens, they would be required to trust the citizens from a state like Ohio, where you can get a license to carry a concealed handgun. So there are only four Ohio legislators who have signed on to that bill as co-sponsors. If your legislator is not one of those four, I recommend you give them a call, send them a note, and let them know that you support that bill, appreciate it if they would sign on to that bill as a co-sponsor as well. Let's take another call. We've got a call from Rick. He's calling on a cell phone and has a question about carry in a liquor establishment. Rick, are you on the air with us?
Yeah, I'm here. A question. I missed last week's discussion on liquor store permit carrying, but I noticed in this year's, or I'm sorry, it's the 2008 version of the Attorney General's concealed carry law. It talks about a D6, D8 permit.
That's correct.
That you're permitted to carry. Can you expand on that
a
little bit?
Yeah. The D6 and the D8 permit are basically places like Kroger that can sell alcohol on Sundays. They have to have a license, or a convenience store has a license, but they are not serving in open containers. And that was the original intent. Most of the D permits are talking about a place like Applebee's or a bar, or you know, some other restaurant that serves alcohol in a glass by the drink. And those are the liquor licenses that they were talking about that you could not carry. And last week, you can catch last week's show on our website at sim-trainer.com/radio, and you'll be able to listen to that show and see what Representative Martin had to say about that and what they're planning on doing.
Currently, as it is right now, then you cannot, even if you do not drink, you cannot carry into Applebee's or
that is correct.
That's the Roadhouse.
That's absolutely correct. If you were to actually go into that facility while you're carrying your handgun, that's a felony. So we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we've got a couple of more calls on the line, and we will get to those after the break, and we'll be talking more about concealed carry on Shooting From the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to Shooting From the Hip. We're talking about concealed carry and concealed carry-related issues today, and something I want to mention that somewhat unique to Sim Trainer. We offer, as I mentioned earlier, the legal block of instruction that deals with both the civil and criminal aspects of concealed carry, and I want to encourage our listeners out there who may have already gotten their permit elsewhere, we offer that segment as a standalone course. In other words, you can come down and you can take just the legal update so that you can get what you probably didn't get in most of the other courses that are being offered out there, and to give you a better, well-rounded understanding of the legal issues surrounding concealed carry. I want to go to a caller, Mark.
We got William in Troy, and William, you have a question for us on concealed carry.
Yeah, I did. I retired from the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office.
Thank you for your service.
I'm actually proud to give it. In 95, and I was talking to the sheriff up here in Miami County, and in order for me to just go ahead and carry a gun, as a police officer, former police officer, I would have had to been within 7 years, and it's been longer than that. Do you know if all counties are the same in Ohio with that restriction?
I don't know that you've been given accurate information, because once you're a retired law enforcement officer, as long as you have your credential, which is your retirement ID and badge from the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, mm-hmm. You don't even need to worry about going to a sheriff's department and obtaining a concealed holder's license.
I was wondering about that. Is that because of the call-up that was made after 9/11 by our president?
Somewhat. It was actually a bill passed in 2006 called House Bill 218, which basically authorized all law enforcement officers, current and retired, who are in good standing and retired under specific provisions that they're able to carry pretty much for the rest of their lives as long as they meet the annual requalification requirement.
Right.
All you're required to do is you can come to us at Sim Trainer, you can go to your host department or some other department, and you just have to get verifiable proof that you've completed the qualification course of fire. And in law enforcement, it's weapon specific, so you must qualify with the weapon that you intend to carry or weapons that you intend to carry.
But that's not necessarily true in concealed carry, huh?
That's correct. No, in concealed carry, you can qualify with any weapon. You can carry any weapon that meets the requirement of being a handgun.
Right.
It does have to be a handgun. It can't be dangerous ordnance, which means you can't have more than 30 rounds in a magazine and that sort of thing. But you can't carry anything with selective fire, like a Glock 18. But you can carry anything that you are competent with, and you only have to qualify with one. There's no specific identification on the license that says what gun. Now, there are some in other states, but that's not the case in Ohio.
Does that have to be so many hours per year?
Yeah, it's not so many hours. All you have to do is complete a qualification course of shooting, and it has to be given by a certified instructor.
And there is a pass-fail.
Yes, it is. It's okay. Pass-fail.
Thanks very much, gentlemen, and I really enjoy your show.
Well, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, something else I wanted to mention, it comes up frequently, this whole issue about guns in bars, just kind of a summary, or at least Sim Trainer's official stance on this. Concealed carry in bars, we very much support that in establishments that serve alcohol, I should say. However, the law currently doesn't authorize you to go to places like Applebee's and places that serve food. And as a result, it creates a little bit of an inconvenience. But as Mark mentioned last week, there's some legislation proposed that will hopefully clean that up. And I want to encourage you to listen to last week's show and see where you fall there, because it doesn't make any sense that you have to secure your gun in your car if you're just going in to have food and you're not going to be consuming alcoholic beverages. Secondly, the whole issue of consumption concealed carry for law enforcement officers. Got to realize that law enforcement officers, the House Bill 218 gives you a lot more expansive authority to carry, and it doesn't have nearly the restrictions that the normal concealed carry license has for civilians. But the issue about carrying in liquor establishments is also a very prominent one, and although there's no specific language that addresses that in HB 218, common sense says you shouldn't be carrying a gun when you're going to be intoxicated, and that's kind of the official stance that most people take on it. There's no specific level that constitutes intoxication. The bottom line is, if you're consuming alcoholic beverages and you're going to be impaired, you shouldn't be carrying and handling guns.
And that's the whole question. It's impairment. And
that's right.
I mean, clearly, you shouldn't be impaired if you're going to drive either. And that's the – I mean, we do have an absolute standard for the impairment at the 0.08 blood alcohol content, 0.08 parts per million. But that is only applicable to those when you're driving. And yet the impairment level could be below that or above that,
right,
for depending on the individual.
Right. Bottom line is, just like I'm so proud, in 5 years of business at Sim Trainer, we've drawn responsible, law-abiding citizens. And responsible, law-abiding citizens should be able to make that determination themselves, and they shouldn't necessarily have to have the legislature talking about when they can and when they can't. Bottom line is, if they're responsible, law-abiding citizens, they're going to go into an establishment that just happens to serve alcohol. They're just going in there to eat. There shouldn't be a big deal. But we'll just see how the law pans out.
We've got one more caller on the line. John, you've got a question about reciprocity. What's your question?
Concerning the reciprocity, when you're traveling through another state that has a reciprocity agreement with Ohio, are you subject to their restrictions or Ohio restrictions?
Absolutely, you're subject to their restrictions. As is the case for when you're driving, you have to follow their highway laws. When you're carrying, you have to follow their firearms laws. And that makes it a little bit more of a challenge, because sometimes finding out exactly what their provisions are can be a little complicated. There are several websites that help you with that. Handgunlaw.us is one. Carryconcealed.net is another. And we'll have some links on our webpage by the end of the weekend that gives you some support for how do you find out how do I carry, what are the provisions, do I have to provide notice to a law enforcement if I'm carrying, as you do in Ohio, and what are some of those other requirements so that when you carry across the country that you can carry safely and follow the laws in each place. But absolutely correct, you must indeed follow the laws in the place where you're carrying.
Okay. Okay, one more quick one, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Concerning, like, a federal reservation or something like Wright-Patterson, obviously the state laws do not apply in any way, shape, or form in those areas.
That's correct. Well, they do apply in the sense that you can't carry there. Ohio law codifies it the same way. But the federal law is what prohibits you from carrying in any federal reservation.
Right.
And fortunately, the parks issue is not a reservation, but the military base, the VA compound, the Veterans Memorial Cemetery, Veterans Memorial Cemetery, any federal building, all of those locations and their premises, and that includes post office because that's federally owned property. All of those places are off limits for your carry.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling, and appreciate you giving us a call here at Shooting from the Hip.
I just want to alert our listeners that next week we're going to try to give you a little bit of an update. We got some good news about products, particularly ammunition and firearms that are becoming available already. We talked about middle of July, early August, but things are starting already to turn the corner. And we're going to give you an update, and we'll proceed on with a number of other topics. But I want to thank you for listening today. I want to encourage our callers, if you have a call next week, remember, 457-1290 is the number here. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.